of back and forth. Been like, I got back home from seeing Benjamin, and I was like cuddling with Locks, and I started sneezing almost immediately. And I was like, so I just took an allergy pill. Hopefully it works. But I'm still itchy.
I am finally turning the corner on this sickness that I've had for like a month now.
Woo!
I am finally not feeling like death.
Yeah.
That's good.
I am no longer having to sleep sitting straight up.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that kind of sucks.
Things are looking up here in Duloc.
Oh, did you guys see that? I don't know if I sent you. Shrek 2 is going to be back in theaters for its like 20th anniversary or something.
I saw that.
Amazing. I'm so excited. I'm going to go see it.
They really should make it a double feature and do one and two, yeah, right?
Exactly. Oh, that would be great. I would love that. I would love to rewatch it in theaters just because it's so funny. It's such a like good movie going experience.
Also, I need people to get on board with how good the musical is too.
It is so good. It is
a bomb ass musical.
It is so much better than I was expecting. I was like,
right? It is,
but it's so funny.
Time.
Yeah, it's enjoyable. It's like for the kids, but also not for the kids. It's a good time. Great. That was
physical
a good one.
Comedy.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah. Fun show.
Good times. Well, hello, friends. Welcome back to We Have Thoughts. We're a podcast about movies. I'm Joy.
I'm Anna.
And I'm Crystal.
Today we are on our Conversations with Oscar series, and we're discussing the Best Picture nominees of the current 2024 season. We are talking about Poor Things. This is an incredible tale and about the fantastical evolution of Bella Baxter, a young woman brought back to life by the brilliant and unorthodox scientist Dr. Goodwin Baxter. Poor Things was nominated for 11 awards, including Best Picture. It was nominated for Lead Actress Emma Stone, Supporting Actor Mark Ruffalo, Director Yorgos Lanthimos, Cinematography Robbie Ryan, Adapted Screenplay Tony McNamara, Original Score Jerskin Fendricks, Makeup and Hairstyling Nadia Stacey, Mark Coulier, Josh Weston, Costume Design Holly Waddington, Editing Yorgos Mavrosarvis. Why? Every year, every time without fail, I forget to look up how to pronounce these names. And production design, James Price, Shauna Heath, and Susa Michalik. This is Poor Things. Friends, what did we think about this?
Whoa. What a movie.
I liked it with some reservations.
I visually was so stimulated and had so much fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I like couldn't stop, like, oh my God, that first shot of her dress, like just the back of the dress of the very first shot. I gasped. I was like, that is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life. And then I felt like I was just gasping for air the entire movie, whether it be from costumes or just weird animals that are put together or just imagery. I was just like, the whole time.
Yeah, it was good. I had a lot of good things in it, a lot of not great things in it. I don't know. I guess do you want me to start with what I... Let's start with what I did like. I loved the set design. It was beautiful. I loved, like, the sci-fi steampunk vibes it was giving me. I really liked
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
I liked like how the colors were turned up, but not shot was really enjoyable. Costume design was great. Not just her blue dress, which was beautiful, but I loved everything she was wearing when they were in Lisbon. That like sheer pink like skirt she was wearing, the yellow dress. I think it was a yellow dress.
Yes, the yellow.
The white boots with like the white puffy a shirt and the yellow shorts. Or I think they were a skirt. Yeah, a lot of it was really good. Very visually interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The makeup was great. I think Willem Dafoe's face was very well. I also loved like the filter they had on it. I don't even know what that is.
Like,
whatever filter they had on it, they threw on it was really interesting. It felt grainy. You could feel the texture in the film, which was really cool. So it made it feel like it was a really old movie, even though like it's not. So that was neat. Yeah, those are what I liked about it.
So I agree. Visually, very exciting. There's a whole lot. There's a really great visual storytelling happening. But I, too, have reservations, and not for dinner at 8 o'clock.
Good, because you'd be late.
I am very late. I'm an hour late, so I can't make it to dinner. I'll make my own dinner, I guess. I really enjoy Bella's approach to experiencing new things. I think I read that from the book that it was adapted. It was more so from the doctor's assistant's perspective, from his POV, and that this is exploring more of Bella's story. So I like that they made that change. I think that that probably made the movie better.
Just to clarify on that, I believe the book is from his perspective and she's refuting his side of things and telling her, like, that's not true. This is what happened.
That's my understanding
of the book.
Okay. But I do like her approach because she lives with the scientists. Her approach to a lot of things is very scientific, like hypothesis, and then we'll try it. And then if I like it, I like it. If I don't, I don't. But I left the movie theater. I was sitting there with Benjamin, and we were both literally just turned to each other and we're like, what the fuck did we just watch? Like, it's a lot. It's a lot visually, and it's a lot story-wise. But I think that you can't have the conversation about her reclaiming her life and her agency without addressing the fact that her brain was taken from an infant. And that she's not like a fully grown, fleshed out woman, only in the physical, but not necessarily in the mental.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that puts a layer of like,
it's very fucked up.
Yeah, very questionable, which I have watched many a fucked up movie and been able to enjoy it just fine. But I think with the things that it's trying to tell us and the messages it's trying to give us, it just, that sits, to me, that sat with me, that thought sat with me the whole movie. And I think it kind of like put a veil over how much I could have enjoyed it fully had it been given to us in a different manner. I think that's probably the most problematic aspect of it, which can take away from how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah, this is definitely one I wish I would have gone to see again before we talked about it. I just didn't have time because
same.
I would have loved to sit down and watch it and not be just so enthralled by what I'm seeing visually and pay more attention to story beats and, you know, just more of the intricacies of that. I think, yeah, it's very... very screwed up that this woman is having all of these experiences with the brain of a child. Although with the rate at which she's learning, I do wonder like where she is developmentally. Not that it makes it any better, but I do wonder that.
Right. Like if they had addressed like at, you know, at her second chapter, her second part of the film, being like, oh, well, you know, how we studied, you know, she's at 17 now or whatever. But they don't give us a definitive, Which is fine. We want to come up with our own conclusions, but they could have given us like an inkling of like, okay, I do think the only thing that was there was the comparison to the second scientific study that they did on the other young woman. And she's not developing. She's not right. developing hardly any at all or nearly as fast as Bella. So Bella, we can assume is much more advanced. But to what age is she advanced? Like, is she mentally advanced like a 20-year-old, like a 30-year-old, like a 13-year-old? Like, what we don't know, and that there's not any sort of clear indication makes it kind of muddy.
Yeah, there's a weird disconnect between, like, her vocabulary and the way she speaks and her intellect. Because obviously she's smarter, but she sounds so infantile when she's speaking that it's hard to like bridge that gap sometimes, being like, oh no, she's smarter than she seems. She's just not eloquent enough. And I do think it's interesting that when we see her reconnected with her husband later on in the film, you know, he's talking about how she was very sexually adventurous and active before she had died, and how that, you know, is supposed to play into how Bella is now. I had a point and it literally just escaped my brain.
I saw it go.
You saw it leave? Did you catch it for me?
No, because it went behind you and that's far. It's too far for me, but maybe your dog has it in the back with you. Have him spit it out. I agree. I think, you know, the metaphor that the movie goes for over and over again is that evolving into yourself as a woman means wanting all of this sex and exploring your sexual desires, which isn't always true. I mean, there is sexual oppression and that whole thing, like that it makes sense, but it's not the whole picture. So when it comes to women's liberation, if it's just boiled down to just like wanting sex, it feels very of the male perspective to me. And I know that Emma Stone has said herself that like she kind of hates when people say that because she's a producer and she had decisions on the film and she made this. And I don't doubt that she made those decisions, but then I have to question her taste if she thinks that this is what that is. And then the fact that I think they're, I remember what I was gonna say first. I think their way of justifying how she got older was showing how her hair was growing. Oh, she's rapidly aging. Her is growing really fast. But then my question is, why does she not have any hair on her underarms, on her legs, if her hair is growing so much? Right? Or why were they not talking about another? My biggest point is like there was no discussion of menstruation, considering that she was pregnant beforehand.
Yes.
And then she's having all this afterwards.
I've thought about that.
Like,
and I think it might be that when he, you know, found her and did his surgery on her, he probably removed her
ovaries. Then I guess it's poor writing then if they're not going to let us know that. Because a woman, we know how a woman's body works. Clearly someone doesn't if it's a question that more than one person had. I mean, they could have said, like, maybe I missed it because I did see it only one time, but... He talks about, also that's another thing too. I know I'm jumping around, but it's clicking in my head. When you meet her husband, you're like, oh, now I see why she jumped off a bridge. Yeah, I get it. He's awful and scary.
Yeah.
Warranted. But then I think like she was done with life. So women can't even have peace in death.
Yeah.
They have to be brought back by a man who thinks he's like, and then the angle of like Willem Dafoe's character, he was experimented. So that's all he knows. That's what he thinks affection is. That's what he thinks care for. And so it's like, it's like a cycle, a vicious cycle. I liked a lot of things about it, but I also didn't like a lot of things about it as well. So I'm kind of torn. And I know I complained about Killers of the Flower Moon being told from a different perspective. And I felt like I was more emotional in that regard, maybe because that was a true story and those are real people. Not that women are real, but this feels more
just at this point, we aren't.
God.
I don't know. I just felt like I just couldn't help but think, what would a woman bring to this movie? I have Yorgos Lanthimos is not a bad director. I've enjoyed things he's done in the past. I like Emma Stone. I like Mark Ruffalo. I love Rami Youssef. I love all these people. I just kept thinking, like, this feels so one-sided. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I saw, I was trying to find the clip of her talking about it. Like, well, I'm a producer on this. And, you know, I agreed to do these things and la, 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 her justification for all of it. And again, yes, I understand. But like, it was written by, it was written solely by a man. It was directed by Yorgos Lanthimos. And I know that she had a lot of input in some of the big decisions being made because she was a producer, but at the same time, like, there was one of my things. Okay, so I'm glad you brought up menstruation, because what I was thinking wasn't necessarily like, oh, when does she get her period? But I was thinking, she's having so much sex with so many different people, and why have we never addressed the fact of like, oh, she could become pregnant by however much sex she's having. And it's never an issue. And
exactly.
Men don't necessarily have that issue. So I was thinking, like, is it because it's from the men's perspective? Like, and again, should we just make an assumption and be like, oh, her entire reproductive system was, like, taken out? But we don't know, because he never clearly stated. It was, she doesn't have any major scars on her body other than the one in her head.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, clearly we saw the totality of her body, so we would have known had there been any sort of other invasive surgery done to any of her other organs. I feel like because it's so visual, it would have indicated that, but it didn't. So I sat there the whole time being like, especially after it's revealed that she was pregnant, oh, okay, so like, no one's worried about it happening again.
Until you mentioned the thing about the scar, I had an argument. But also, you sent us a video about this last night, this morning, and it's been something I've been seeing a lot of, is media literacy. Like, did we need that to be spoon-fed to us? Like, the idea that this man he himself is an abomination. He's creating many abominations. Mm-hmm. Like, he literally put the baby's brain inside of her head. It's not an insane idea to think, oh, he also took out her reproductive organs. Like, I don't think that's a far stretch. I don't think it's a far, I'm not saying, I think it would have benefited from the addition of saying something about it. I think it would have also benefited from the idea of, from having more of that in there, but also, like, I don't know. I wasn't as bothered as I thought I would be.
Yeah. And I get that. I don't think it has to be like, oh yeah, I removed her ovaries and her blah blah blah. I think, like, it could have been a visual cue. Is there a scar on her lower abdomen? Like, there's a scar on the back of her head.
Until you mentioned, like, that.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be as clear as, like, just like, here's her entire how everything works.
You know that scene where she's in, I think it's Lisbon with Mark Ruffalo, and he's like, they're ready to have sex again. And so he's like, what is that? He looks down at her, and I was like, oh, maybe she got her period or maybe something. But no, it's just like something someone drew, like, oh, this is soft and this is not. Like,
oh, the tattoo.
The tattoo, yeah. And I was like, that would have been a really good spot to show, like, a scar or the fact that she's bleeding or something like that. But it's just a cute little tattoo. Okay.
I it would have been so interesting how she's experiencing everything for the first time, and she's seeing, like, the like inequalities between men and women in this kind of society, had she experienced menstruation and just been like, oh, well, you know this. And granted, not, you know, everybody experiences menstruation, so that's understandable. But even, like, just there's like other concerns, like, were we never concerned about, like, I don't remember if it mentioned it in the movie, but, like, no, I lost it. Okay, never mind. Someone else talk. It's gone.
Also, STDs.
Yeah. Girls
having a lot of sex. And while I do think there was a lot of sex in the beginning with her and Mark Ruffalo, I think she very quickly did learn, like, okay, I am getting pleasure from this, but there's also so much more to life than this. So I think that point was made at the right time. That makes sense. Like, it wasn't sex, 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 and then, oh yeah, I guess I should learn something else. I felt like it was like that. The timing of that was really well done. And then she was like, I'm done with you. I still like sex, but also I'm going to talk to these people because they're way more interesting, or I'm going to learn about this because I'm interested in it and I'm going to learn all I can. I liked it.
I would have loved to hear when she's on the boat and she's having the conversation with that old white lady. And she's like, I haven't had sex in 20 years because I have other things to do. That would have been really great. A longer scene, like more with her, you know?
Yeah.
Why do you feel that way? What's going on? That would have been a really good conversation, really, really good scene, but it didn't happen. She's just showing traumatic scenes, but Gerard Carmichael like shows her this genocide, and she's like, "Oh my god!" Like, ah.
I was very happy to see Gerard Carmichael. I love him. Very excited to see him.
Supporting cast was really good in this.
It was.
I know that they touched on it just a little bit, but I also wish, because she's discovering self-pleasure in the beginning, I wish she would have talked a little bit more about that with the old lady. I know they touched on it just a little bit, but if, you know, they could have gone a little bit more in depth in that, considering how, like, how disproportionate it is for, like, men and women to be able to know that they can experience that. Men clearly know that, but, you know, women are a little bit more sheltered by that in general.
One of my favorite quotes is, Bella dizzy with delight.
You know, I do have to say, Emma Stone, congrats. Your British accent got even better than the favorite. I'm very happy. She sounded very, very clearly very British. And British people loved her because she got the BAFTA. So I guess her British accent is British approved.
She's also white. The British loves the white people.
True.
That helps.
I think Emma Stone gave a great performance. I loved this performance from her.
She definitely acted the most acting out of anybody.
But there was more to it, I think. I felt like, especially there towards the end, there was a lot more there than just the most. I really enjoyed this performance from her.
Yeah, I think that she did really well. I think it's a very meaty role. I think there's a lot. And I think it's interesting to see the narrative of, like, the showiest performances versus the most, like, the more internal, like, nuanced face acting performances. Narrative that's kind of, like, come to play within both the Best Actress and Best Actor categories this year.
Those are hard to determine which is best, the quiet and the loud, like which is better, who can say, like, you know, sometimes right, they're both so exactly. good, that's hard.
Yeah, they're so different, and they're both so good in their in what they are, because, like, you know, coming down to Best Picture, like, it's just preference, it's just what the Academy True. Decides they like more that year. I do think she did well, and I think that she had a lot to work with there. There was a lot. The physicality of it was really good. I really loved her movement, and because she doesn't know anything else, she just goes with whatever feels like natural to her versus like what she's taught. So I really liked how that was explored in the movement. And even later on when she comes to understand the world a little bit better, she doesn't lose that inhibition. She's still very much like naturalistic curious. And like, yeah, very curious all the time. And I think it helps that, like, you know, she has kind of like grown up around a scientist, and so that's the way that she approaches the world, because that's what she knows. So I really like the physicality of her performance.
I think what's interesting is I don't think Bella was really taught anything.
No.
Mm-mm. She was a creature of observing. Like,
yeah.
She relearned everything by observation. So I think that's why her physicality is so different. Like, the way she walks is so weird and stilted and stiff. It's because she's just imitating what she sees. No one taught her, like, oh, you have to put one foot in front of the other. And eventually it gets better because you, with practice, you get better.
And is it like I think that? She's like an infant brain. That's why she's walking like that, in the beginning at least.
Well, I feel like she was pretty stiff for a while.
Oh.
Like, even when she was with Mark Ruffalo, she was very kind of, like, walking more stiffly than normal. Maybe that was just me, but...
No, because, like, even when she's dancing, too, it's very, like, it's very, like, abrupt movements. And, yeah, it's not graceful. It's not, like, connected.
No.
It's just...
But, by God, it was great. I love
that dance scene was great, actually. I enjoyed that.
And if we're talking about performances, I also really enjoyed Mark Ruffalo here.
Oh my God. Yes. So, like, as shitty as his character is, he's great. And one of the interviews I saw with one of the roundtables, he was saying that, like, he wasn't sure he could do this kind of performance because he hasn't had a chance to play that sort of character yet. So he was worried about it, but they were like, no, you'll do great. And he did. He did really great.
But they also teased him, like, do we need to call Oscar Isaac? Do we need to call someone else? And he'd be like, no, I can do it.
Oh my God. That's great. I would, oh man. Rami, what's his last name? Rami Youssef was also really great. I think the whole supporting cast was really fantastic. I would have loved, again, another Aquam. I would have loved if she had other, besides the old lady that she meets later, I would have loved if she was surrounded by maybe one woman. And I know
she has her friend, like, in the brothel.
Yes, but like before that, like early on. Her friend, girlfriend in the brothel later, yes. But like early on, because she has Rami Youssef, she has William Dafoe, and then she has Mark Ruffalo, but she doesn't have any, like, there's that, the maid lady there, but she doesn't actually have, like, any sort of connection with her when she's there. But I would have loved, like, one woman kind of, like...
Yeah, a female presence to counteract all the men, like, that was in her life.
Yeah.
Well, I think God kept it that way on purpose.
Also, the fact that his name is God, I was like, I'm gonna throw up.
Also, like... Rose, that, like, in the beginning when he's having that, first of all, a lot of these conversations are being had about her and not included with her, which is why you know, her growth and her trajectory in being able to be an autonomous person is great to see. But how in the beginning I think Rami questions him and is like, well, you never thought of sleeping with her? And he was like, I did, but then it didn't work, or whatever his
no, because he's was. A eunuch, he can't.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's okay, why.
The only reason he can't is because he physically can't.
Which, that, again, okay, so I think that men do themselves a disservice in writing, in media, in whatever, in general. I think men do themselves a disservice by not thinking that them or any other men has the potential for empathy or for compassion towards other genders or other people. And they're just like, oh, well, because he doesn't have a sexual reproductive organ, so that's the only reason why he's not interested in her. Because that says so little about what you also think of men. You think men are driven by their sexual urges and organs only. And that doesn't give you any space for, like, men to be fully human or to experience full range of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think in boiling that down, it just, if sexism hurts women, it also hurts men, just 100%. In a different way. And yes. I know that way more educated people can say way more on that. But the same way that misogyny hurts us, misogyny is also hurtful and violent towards men.
Yes. Hundo P.
Which is a point that Barbie makes as well, actually.
after watching this, so I had to let the movie sit with me for a little bit, because I had, first of all, I was just like, what the fuck is going on? My brain has exploded. Visually, I, a lot of overstimulation, but in a wow, okay, this is what film can do sort of way. But in the same way, I feel that Barbie was like feminism 101 for, like, you know, young girls who haven't had that clearly explained to them yet, or like women who've grown up in environments where, you know, feminism is icky and like you don't want to be a feminist, they're nasty and whatever negative connotations that holds. This kind of feels like feminism 201, where like it's talking about it as well, but there's so much more like nuance, and there's so many more levels of it that we could explore. And so Barbie was level one, and then this is like level two for like adults. But also, like, it's about feminism, but it's also not about like universal feminism so much as it is about Bella and who she is and her personal autonomy, because there's a limit to how much feminism this can portray. And I think in the same way, like, I'm sure Noah Baumbach contributed plenty to the Barbie screenplay. But looking back on it now, fuck him, I don't care about him. But looking back on it now that I've watched it a couple of times, I've watched other movies, I watched this. Too much Ken. Too much men in Barbie, too much. And yes, I know it has to be there in order to show how it affects everybody, but in a movie where it was going to be Barbie, and then there's also so much Ken, I was like, wait, I need more Barbie. And it also, you know, because it is feminism 101, it kind of leaves some things out, because it's just like, let's get the basic concept so everybody can grasp it, so we're all on the same page. I feel like there's that connection between these two. It's about, you know, two women coming into their own, kind of like coming of age movies, them being able to understand themselves and their bodies and their emotions and the limits that they have within society, and, you know, how they can break out of that. But I just thought it was two very interesting, like, parallels here being told in different ways. And that how Barbie and this are, in a way, trying to, like, decenter men from their lives. But just in two totally different approaches.
I like what you said about being 1.101 and 201 or whatever. That's really interesting. It sparks a lot of really interesting conversations. And I have a question. What was the bubble that was coming out of his mouth when he burped or something? I was like, what? Did he drink soap? Did I miss something?
No, because of all of the experiments that his father performed on him, his body doesn't regulate gas.
Oh, I guess I missed that.
That was the machine he had.
So he has to, like, it has to, like, take it out of him. Or, like, it pumps it, and then he can release it.
Because I was like, that was a bubble? And it happened a couple times. I was like, did I miss something? Did he drink, like, a thing of soap? I was so confused. Okay, got it.
Everything that came out of his mouth was progressively and progressively the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. I was like, oh, nope, you just topped yourself. Oh, you topped yourself. Oh. We're at the top yet again.
You know what I thought was so creepy is when they're, well, a lot of things, but one of the, or maybe not creepy, I was like, oh, this is weird. When they are on the boat and it's so quiet and Bella's like walking around first, I'm like, why is it so quiet on this boat? That's very odd. And then she goes outside, she sees more people. But initially I was like, is this a horror movie? Should I be scared? Oh, I was nervous because I didn't know what was going to happen.
It did have those elements of it. And I can see that from her perspective, you know, she just wakes up in this strange place. Yeah, that's scary. Yeah. That would be scary to any woman, any person, but like, especially her, that she doesn't know a whole lot about what's going on, but just knows that that's not right in whatever way it's supposed to be, is interesting.
It is.
So there's a Yorgos Lanthimos said that he wanted to do the story because he wanted to explore a woman without shame. To me, I think that's really interesting. Speaking of a woman with a lot of shame, what would that be? What would that be like? And I feel like part of it we did get here, but part of it I feel like we got, like, again, like kind of one note, one sided version of that. I do like that a lot of the stuff in the beginning, she's like, I'm going to do this because I want to, or I'm not going to eat this because I don't like that. And I don't want to dance with you because I don't like you, or whatever. It's those are very much things that, like, yeah, if we weren't shamed for it, yeah, we would definitely be a lot better at, like, saying no to things, or, you know, like pushing, like, not just brushing things off, but like taking a clear stance on something. So I think there was great kernels of ideas there. And they are explored, but just, like, again, had we had it from the perspective of someone with a female experience, or just, like,
yeah,
not a bunch of men.
Yeah, because Yorgos is a great director. Like, he does a really good job.
He is. And you know what? Because I really enjoyed The Favorite. And those were three really well, like, fleshed out female characters who are all different and have different motivations and are interesting and complex. And not to say Bella's not. She is. She's interesting and she's complex. But it just is... To say it without shame, do you mean that, you know, primarily what it's focused on, especially in the beginning, is, like, you know, sexuality? So do you, like, without shame, again, is it only comparing it to, like, men who men can really only have sex without shame versus us? Or, like, what are you trying to say with that? I'm confused. I don't know. I feel like... Because he put so much emphasis on the sexuality, I feel like there should have been a little bit more, like, resolution in that, to me personally.
No, yeah, this kind of echoed what I said earlier. It's like, sexual liberation isn't the only way to be liberated as a woman. It is a way, but it's not the only way. And I feel like had they presented a little bit more of variety in what it means to be free, what it means to be strong in yourself and know yourself and evolve into yourself... I think it was presented in a different way rather than just the one, I would have been okay with. And I have no problem with, like, you know, coming into yourself sexually and understanding yourself and your body and all that stuff. That's actually really great. And I think it kind of helps break down barriers to people who maybe aren't, like, okay with seeing that or hearing that or knowing about it. Mm-hmm. That's why I think all that stuff in the brothel was really good, especially when she's talking to one of the, I don't want to call them suitors, her clients, I guess. When she's like, before we do this, like, tell me a secret about yourself and I'll tell you a joke. I thought it was a really interesting way to break the ice and to make it, like, her own, you know, because she felt like it was so, like, so tactile. Like, it was so just so. And she was like, no, I want to make it fun.
Yeah,
I want to make it fun for you and me rather than just you. And I really like that. Mm-hmm. And what she learned about all that stuff in the brothel was very interesting. Although... that scene with the two young boys was so disturbing to me. I was like, I don't want to watch this. This is, I'm pretty sure that happened all the time. I don't doubt it, but I was like, I don't want to say that.
Yeah, because up until then, sex for her was about her own pleasure, and then suddenly it's not. It's about these men who are paying for their pleasure, and she's like, no. If I'm going to do this, I'm getting my own pleasure out of this. But just real quick, a quick note. This is an adaptation of a novel. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, there's the last movie we'll talk about is also an adaptation where he kind of took, like, the basis of the idea and then wrote the screenplay. But this one, I think, is more true to the story. So comparing, like, Emma Stone, how she's written here and her story here to The Favorite, that was an original story by Tony McNamara and Yorgos and, well, I just had her name. What's her name? Deborah Davis. So I just think it's interesting to look at, like, how he's written and does original women. Obviously, there's actual history in there. But with the favorite, but just comparing, like, an adaptive versus an original screenplay with Yorgos. Just thought that was fun.
Oh, yeah. I see that. That's interesting. Oh, I had a note.
I have a little side tangent I can go on.
Yes.
That either of you are going to care about. But for those of you listening, off one and a half, maybe two of you, if you've ever read the book, The Night Circus by Aaron Morgenstern, it is one of my very favorites. I have a tattoo. I love this book. I love this world. I often think if I was given a blank check and said, create your own adaptation of this, this is the one of whatever you want, this is the thing I could do.
And you could.
Because I've thought about it. I've dissected it so much. I'm like, okay, if we were going to make like an HBO series, this is how I would break it up. If we were going to make
Write that down.
I think about this story a lot. But Aaron Morgenstern, I believe, has said that for the character of Hector, she's always imagined Jeffrey Rush. And I never saw it until I saw the King's Speech. And I was like, okay, I can get behind this. Huh. In my head, the character of Mr. A.H., in my head was always Christopher Plummer. And unfortunately, we've lost Christopher Plummer. And my heart broke. That was one of my first thoughts when I heard that he died. I was like, oh, he can't be in my adaptation.
Of course, that was your first thought.
Oh. Not my very first. I said one of the first.
One of the first. Okay.
But I think Willem Dafoe would be a great Mr. A.H. or a Hector.
Has that ever made into any adaptation before?
Oh, no. Okay. So for that niche little crossover group that I'm sure is out there.
Get on board.
I think he'd be great.
So I did write something down. So Pop Culture Detective is a YouTube channel that I used to watch a lot more of. I haven't seen stuff in a little while. But they dissect like film and movie tropes. And there's one specifically that applies to this. And it's called the Born Sexy Yesterday trope.
I do not fit into this trope.
There's two other examples of it. One I haven't seen, one I have. So from Tron, the remake from a couple of years ago, what's her name? Olivia Wilde's character is like new and like basically childlike in her mental capacity, but it's experience in the world. Element. And the Fifth Element is the other one. Yes, because I thought you had seen it. Yeah, I thought you'd seen it. So the Fifth Element and Tron were used as like the main examples of this. But I think that this also falls into that, which, again, a very problematic trope, if not addressed correctly. But it's interesting. And it usually happens just like in sci-fi sort of situations. But it's very interesting. And I went back and I watched the video again to prepare for this. But interesting that it keeps like it. There's not like a more modern current film that I think it applies with. But I don't know. Maybe you guys can think of something else because I can't.
I feel like that trope wouldn't go over as well. I mean, this movie is kind of going over well, but I think it's because it's packaged so well. And it's acted so well that more people are willing to like look past it. But I feel like that trope probably can't be done as much anymore. I feel like it would be flagged. But I mean, I hate to compare it to it, but it's similar to when people like when young girls are like hunted when it comes to like cults and things like that because they're moldable and they can. And it's not the same thing. I know this is not. It's way different, but I just kept thinking of like someone wanting someone so young that they can mold into what they want is gross.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm trying to think of like the opposite of this, where like the man is put in that position. Okay, I'm thinking Rocky. My brain is going off in like four different places. Rocky Horror.
Yeah.
He's creating his sexy sex bot. But then also, I think we see this more with men portrayed as men with disabilities.
Which is not positive. That's very negative. That's a negative connotation to it, too.
I'm pretty sure it's like The Boy Downstairs or something about Adam. They might be two different movies I'm thinking about. But like, it's a guy with Asperger's or who's on the spectrum, since Asperger's is no longer in the DM5. Is it the five? Anyway. But yeah, I think we see something like that more with men. But they're more like mentally disabled than they are like sexy, born sexy yesterday.
Yeah, which is problematic in and of itself, because like, of course, you know how disabled people get taken advantage of and taken control over plenty of times because they don't have the same sort of agency that able-bodied people are allowed.
I've got another one. Captain America. Boy was scrawny and got no game. And then he turned up hot and was like, oh, wait. Yeah, I guess I'll look at him. Although I guess Peggy did look at him before. Mm-hmm. Like, she was nice to him before his transformation. Mm-hmm. But she was also like part of the team that was working. So like,
that's a good point. Also, that's the whole thing about like the country doing what they want with you for their own benefit. And that's a whole, a whole other thing.
We would be here for hours.
I know.
I just wanted to shout out, and I'll put it, I'll send you the video, but one of the reviews I saw from this was from Emily, who's Movie Mija on TikTok. And she was the one that was put it into words because I couldn't verbalize it myself. Asking if men who made this movie actually believe that sex plays such a pivotal role in the liberation of women, or if this is just another way that men sexualize feminism, that men like feminism, men like women who are feminists because they're so sexually liberated and they're willing to do anything, mm-hmm. and blah, 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 blah. And again, that's feminism 201 with like the whole point is that we're our own people. We're able to make our own decisions as any other human, as any other man is able to. And we get to choose. And that's it. Yeah. It's just like we
get to be complex.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Heaven forbid.
I don't know. I keep saying the same thing over and over again, but sex is great, but it's not the only thing. It's not the only thing that makes you a woman. So would have been nice to see a well-rounded portrayal of that. But that's not what this movie wanted to do, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is annoying because that's an excuse everyone gives when movie doesn't fully give the narrative it should. And I remember I read some comments somewhere about like someone also something about like she didn't have her period. What was that about? And people were like, why do you want to see a period? That's gross. I'm like, first of all, it's not gross.
It's not. It's normal. It happens to plenty of people.
And, you know, being pregnant and period, like it's not separate. You know what I'm saying? So like, mm-hmm. you can't have one, not the other. I don't know. I just think it's very one-sided. I enjoy a lot about it, but with reservations for sure. But I think my favorite Letterboxd review was, I wish I saved it. It was like, Bella, where the hell you been, loca? And I thought that was funny.
She's been going through it.
Oh my God. That was amazing. I saw that one too. It was so funny.
I wish I'd saved it.
That's so good. You know, and again, is this just, it's not about feminism as a whole, sure. It's just about Bella and Bella's perspective. But you know, that also, because sex isn't everything, that also leaves out people who are asexual, people who have nothing to do with sex, people who don't feel sexual attraction. That's a good point. So then you just eliminated a whole nother group of people from your point. So
I hope people this side of what they wanted to tell was good. Great. I hope someone else tells the story, but with a different angle. Because it's interesting. It is interesting, like, a woman coming into herself and coming to, maybe not, like, taking an infant brain. That's a problem. Or someone who wants to die. Her own
infant brain.
Yeah, like, she wants to die, so let her die. Like, don't resurrect her. She didn't want to live. She made her choice. That was annoying to me.
Although, is it? I mean, yes, absolutely. But is she the same person?
See, that's where it gets muddy. Like, who's... Yeah. Who is she? Who is she not anymore?
Who is Bella?
It gets a little, when you quote unquote play God, this is what happens.
Uh-huh.
You know?
And you know, the other point that brings up is when she were still alive, before she killed herself, if she was given the option to just be like, do you want to still be you? Or do you want to just completely erase who you are and start life all over again? Would she have taken that choice? But again, she wasn't given that choice. But that, you know.
Her husband is, like, terrible. So she's like, I have to get out of here. And she felt like that was her only way out, was that way, probably.
Exactly. So if she had another option of the way out that was like, hey, let me just operate on you and you'll completely forget who you are. I'll hide you away from your husband. You'll have a whole nother life. Do you want that?
Yeah, it's almost like a female writer who did a better job. Wow.
It's like he's exactly advertising his weird experiments.
Yeah, no, he's not. He doesn't have like a need surgery. Come here, advertisement.
Let me do weird ass experiments on you. Look at my dog duck. Some of those little creatures disturbed me, but a lot of them I was just like, I want it. I need it. Let me love it. But also. Oh, God, why is my brain not working today? You know, her situation was bad when she jumped being that pregnant. Because yeah. She knew that her husband was going to be that awful to their child as well.
That's bad, yeah. Bad. And I love that, the way that's set up, that we didn't know that until later on.
Yeah.
Yeah. We never saw her belly until later.
That was really good. And when her husband comes, I legit got, like, scared. Like, horror movie scared. Uh-huh. Like, my heart was racing because I was like, what's going to happen? He looks so scary.
I loved his karma. I thought his karma was wonderful.
Yeah.
But did we ever get confirmation the gender of her child?
I want to say that it was a girl, but I have no idea.
Right. That's my initial gut reaction, but
I don't know either.
I thought they mentioned it, but I saw it a while ago, so I have no idea.
Gender is a construct, but right. I wonder how, like, if it was a male fetus, if that would have played into it anyway.
Oh, that it would have been interesting, like, okay, I don't know anything about the trans experience, so I'm so sorry if I'm speaking out of turn. But I feel like I shouldn't say it. Maybe I'm saying something off color. Never mind. I'll be
put it in the chat. Put it in the chat, and then we'll review it.
No, because I don't, like, again, I don't want to say things about an experience I don't think of, and I don't want to sound like an idiot.
That's fair.
We can discuss after.
Having a male brain into a female, quotes I'm saying, into a male body and what that would mean. Again, that's not something I could ever really fully discuss and... Because I'm not someone who's just going to talk shit and just say things out of my ass, because that's not me. But that would have been interesting, I guess.
I appreciate how respectful you are.
I don't want to offend anybody. It's like, that's a sensitive thing, and I don't want to.
You're making the right choice.
There actually is, I believe I read an article about, not an article, but actually I think it's a Letterboxd review of how someone compared this to the trans experience. So I'll send it to you afterwards. Aside from all the sketchy, scary shit, this movie was really funny.
Very funny.
There were so many jokes. The jokes were all there. Joke, 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 joke.
What was your favorite joke?
Damn it. Now I can't remember any of them. Because I'm like, again, I watched this so long ago.
Crystal held a gun to her.
I know.
No, I was like pointing at you like, go. Like,
oh, and you're like, what's your favorite joke?
No. One finger is point. Two finger is gun. Duh.
You were low in the frame, so all I saw was like this.
Oh, okay.
My there could have been another finger.
I got five fingers. See? Five.
Oh my god.
Wow.
I can't remember now, but I know that I was like genuinely laughing through the whole thing. It was either I was laughing or my face was just like.
There was one scene where I remember now, where Duncan, Mark Ruffalo's character, is crying about something because he's a baby, and he just randomly hits his head on the counter, and I went because it scared me. It was so loud, and he's crying, and then Bella comes over to him, and she just kind of like awkwardly pats him on his back. I was like, oh my god, that's me. That's what I do. She comforts people like from afar, like. That's me.
Like the queen in the Bridgerton spinoff, like sorrows and prayers.
I never saw that show, but the stills looked gorgeous.
It is gorgeous.
It was a gorgeous show.
And that just
was actually like, pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. And that season of it was really good too. Minus one character that they did a disservice to, but what's her name? Oh my god.
Danbury?
Lady Danbury. I love Lady Danbury, but her backstory, wow, I was upset. That was not what I wanted for her.
We'll talk after.
We'll chat, for sure. So any other notes before we go into categories?
Let's see. I have kind of a lot of notes.
Bella Girl. An apple?
Oh my god. So I saw so much about this online that people were like unsure. They knew what she was doing, but they were unsure of the, let's say, depth of what was happening.
Oh no, there was no depth.
Which is what I understood. I understood it as no depth, but a lot of people understood it as yes, there is. But I was like, no, why would you? First of all, I think all the reviewers who thought that were men, maybe, I don't know, whatever.
Probably.
But I was like, that I didn't see it as depth. I saw it as, you know.
These are men who wouldn't know where the clit was if you drew them a map.
Exactly.
See, there you go. Further point that it should have been written by someone else. Whatever. No,
reviewers. I mean, get off what you want to get off with, but I just thought it was an odd choice.
Yeah, of the choices of the fruit bowl, that's not like number one. But I don't know. People have all sorts of tastes. And plus, she was new. She didn't know what she was doing, you know?
Absolutely. I really loved all the fisheye lens kind of vibe.
Yes.
Very Yorgos. I love him.
I feel like it worked for the best out of. He's the favorite as well, but I feel like it fit the odd, weird vibe it was going for. I think that it was like, the only time that like fisheye lens happened, I was like, oh, I don't mind it. Usually I'm like, that's kind of annoying. But here I was like, oh, this is good. I like it.
Yeah, I don't know if this is his like preferred aesthetic, but I feel like it fits really well for him.
Yeah.
And just like in general, his directing style. I think it was really great.
Whenever they were in the boat and Gerard Carmichael shows her like that town, that city that's like destructive, they don't like talk about what happened to those people, do they? Did I not get the reference or something?
No, I don't think so. I don't.
It's just a bunch of people in like terror, I guess, general terror.
Yeah. I think it's just the idea that, you know, where there is great wealth, there is also the slums.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it was specific to any one thing.
Okay. You know what else I really liked is the title sequence and the ending credits. Yeah. I loved like whenever it would go between like Lisbon or Paris, like the whatever
the arc chapters.
The title cards.
The chapters, there you go. Like the art I was showing on the chapters. Oh, yes. I loved it. Also, I loved the font of this movie.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was like, why do I want like a font? Okay. Yeah.
Look at you, visual artist.
Like I would want like the font of the like poor things on a shirt. Like I would wear. I think that's cool. What poster would I want on a t-shirt? To think about.
I'm obsessed with all of these posters.
I like the one on this on the soundtrack where it's just her face. It's Emma Stone's face and her lips and her eyebrows.
Her makeup. Her
makeup is colors. That's cool.
It's the different men in her life. I love that. Fantastic. It's so smart.
I love that. I also love all the heads, like where it looks like she has.
Oh yeah, like, yeah.
Three heads. Mm-hmm. I love them.
It's so the aesthetic of it, the magical surrealism is so was so well done. So well done.
I really hope this leads to more things for Rami, because Rami's British accent kind of slipped a little bit towards the end there in a couple of sentences. But overall, I think he did a good job. I'm a huge fan of Rami Youssef. I think he is so funny and he's so smart. If you haven't seen his show, Rami, which is like a semi-autobiography, it's about his life, kind of. But it's very interesting because, like, it's called Rami, but he has episodes dedicated to, like, his mom and what it means to be an immigrant. And a mother, or like his uncle who has all this wealth because he has like a jewelry store, but he's also closeted. So like, what does that mean for him as an older Arab man? Very, very good stuff. Yeah, highly recommend Rami if you haven't seen it yet.
The one thing on this, when I was watching it, I don't know that anyone else other than Poor Things can give Barbie a run for its money on costumes. This is the one that I was like, oh, it's really good. I thought I had my winner, but I think this is really great. And I love how they played with like textures and like period pieces, but also like modern cuts, modern silhouettes of it too. So
yeah, like
really
the crop,
interesting. Yeah, the crop of it. Things with the big shoulder, but there's a lot of sheer, a lot of like.
I loved all the sheer.
There's some latex in it too.
Her robe in the early black and white, I needed like all of her nightgowns. I wanted all of them. I wanted her entire wardrobe, essentially. I was gagged, as they say. Gooped and gagged.
Oh my god.
Literally watching this movie, trying not to cough out a lung, just like because I kept gasping for air, like, that dress, that set. That was me in the theater. That's how long I've had this goddamn cough.
Oh, my God. The production design on this? Damn, yeah. Bitch, I can't. And I saw some of the behind-the-scenes video and how they really did construct, like, all of these, a majority of these sets. Oh, my God. Like, money well spent. I really, it's hard to think that like a movie with this kind of budget can do all of this with it, and yet movies with bigger budgets can do almost nothing. Like, come on, be wise with your money, invest in the right things. Practical sets are so useful. And really when it's like a character story, it just works. It just works.
Yeah, because that they told as much of the story as the actual script did.
For sure. Yeah. 100%.
Obsessed with the visuals of this film.
Yeah. I kind of want to like go there and just be like, let me wear these weird clothes and let me exist in this strange space and let me discover it. I want to do it. Like,
and I know these were like real things. Like they were things that women actually wore, but I loved like the lobster tail looking thing that she wore. But she didn't have anything over it, like the petticoat.
Oh, yes, the petticoat. Oh, yeah, with the bustle. Yeah. So great. Love that. I love it. Yeah, it's like a deconstructed version of that. It's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
So cool. Yeah, costumes in this were really great.
Yeah, good job, Holly Waddington.
Yeah, she did great. Anyone else?
Bella dizzy with delight.
That's how I feel after dessert. Okay. Sorry. So, best picture. Yeah,
I agree.
Maybe so.
Yeah, I think so. There's a lot of good things in there. And I feel like it's, for at least for me personally, if it's a movie that I did like but also had reservations about, that seems pretty best picture, fits criteria for best picture. So I think that works out.
Yes, it's complex, and I think that's what makes it part of what makes it good. Best actress.
Yes, I think this is one of her best performances.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy that she would get that. It feels very best actress-y. I don't know if it's my favorite of hers. I don't think about that. I really like The Favorite, but I think more because I like that movie more in general.
Easy A.
Oh my God, yeah.
Well, duh.
Easy A. Her Pocket Full of Sunshine in the Shower is what's it, for sure.
Oscar winner right there.
I mean, I prefer her to win this over La La Land, to be honest with you. But it's not going to happen, so whatever.
Yeah, we can't rewrite history, unfortunately.
Very rarely, I feel like actors win for the role they're supposed to win for. I feel like it's always swapped, so.
The Academy always fucks up with that. Like, they're like, either a couple years too late or a few years too early. And
then I think maybe the win of La La Land help her build her clout to make this movie. So then I guess that's good then. She was able to use the momentum from that and the platform to make this kind of movie. She couldn't have done this years before. So it all kind of fits when it's got to fit, you know?
I will say one thing I hate about the conversation about the best actress race that I'm seeing. First of all, let me say, I want Lily Gladstone to win. She's my pick. And I love her and I want this win for her. But I've been seeing a lot of like, does Emma Stone deserve to have two Oscars at this point in her career? Like, fuck that. Although I don't believe that she deserved that. Like, she wasn't my pick for winning in La La Land. Like, don't hold her back. Don't hold a woman back for succeeding and doing well. Like, fuck that. I don't know, that whole line, like, she doesn't deserve to have two wins at this point in her career, I think is bullshit. And I see I'm being met with silence, so.
I mean, I don't really have an opinion on that, so.
I mean, I understand that, like, you know, sometimes some people, certain actors or actresses get, like, too successful too early. And I don't know.
Well, what does that mean? Too successful too early? So what? Let them be successful when they're successful. They're going to have.
Yeah. I mean,
they're going to have bouts of their career when they're not.
Yeah. Cause in that case, like what we were just saying, you know, if she doesn't get it for this and then she does like shitty things for the next 40 years, like she'll never get it again.
But, I don't know. She'll have some great comeback when she's like 60 and we'll be like, that's the Emma Stone I remember.
I don't think she'll do crappy movies. I feel like her style anymore. She and then we've known her for a really long time since Superbad. So it's not like she's new, you know what I mean? I think she's just making a lot of really good choices. And I think
I don't think this is this only applies to Emma, is what I'm saying, Emma Stone. I feel like just that idea in general is really weird and really stupid.
Yeah, it doesn't apply to a lot of other people. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of like what they said about Jennifer Lawrence back then whenever she was like getting all of her stuff. And they're best friends, so now it happens to both of them.
I just think it's a weird thought.
When people say that, it's hard to not sound like jealousy. Like, how are you winning so much? Like, how am I winning so much? What?
Maybe I'm good.
So there's really no way to say that and not sound like green with envy. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's not that I don't want to see new performances by new actresses or different actresses. I want that. I want them to succeed. I want them to be good. But not at the peril of another person's success. Like, I believe both can be true at the same time. Emma Stone or whoever can have a great career and have great performances and deserve all the accolades, and newcomers can come in and have that. I think the industry is the issue, but
like, we have to remember that, like, we're all still on Twitter, the cesspool that is the internet, and you can't have one thing without, like, you can't have multiple things. Everything on that side is black and white. There's no gray, right? So, yeah. like, you can't win all this stuff because then you're, no one else is winning. That's not what I said. Yeah. I said that she's, I'm happy she's winning, and that's it. I'm not saying I hope that they lose. Right. So, yeah, you're right. The bigger issue is Hollywood and Twitter in general.
Twitter in general.
That's the issue.
Twitter is not a place. Twitter's just... It's Twitter.
It's just not a place.
It's just not a place.
Which sucks because it's used to be so good. It used to be such a great, like, communal... At least in when I was, like, the circles I was in at the time. Well, yeah, I'm still the same circles, but, like, it's just different.
The waters have been muddied.
Yeah, and for so long, the water that I was at wasn't infected by the mud, but now it's starting to seep in, and it's like...
Dysentery is rampant.
Yeah. it has spread farther than I want it to, which is a shame.
Yeah, and you know... Yeah, okay, all right. Enough about Twitter, but yes, yes. Twitter has become less and less as the years go by, unfortunately. I do think this is a really good marrying of her... comedic and dramatic abilities.
I would agree with
that. Mm-hmm.
And at least from what I'm remembering of her, what is it called? Not Big Bibliography. what is it called?
Discography.
Her credits?
Discography.
Filmography.
Her
Bibliography.
Oh my God, not the Chicago style annotations. Of her stuff that she's done.
Her filmography.
Filmography.
I need an MLA.
Oh God. Of her filmography, this is the best example I've seen of her being able to do dramatic and comedic together. And I think a lot of it has to do because it's a very physical performance. So I'm glad that she had the opportunity to do this kind of role.
Yeah. And the fact that she couldn't have done a performance, like I said, years prior, like it all came to a head. Like this, it was right person, right time, right everything, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Supporting actor for Mark Ruffalo. He is up against Sterling K. Brown for American Fiction, Robert De Niro, Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr., Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling for Barbie.
Yes. Yeah. I think he did a good job. He's also another one that like kind of just let his like goofy flag fly.
Yeah.
And it made me forget that he was like a superhero. Like, oh yeah, he's Hulk. Like, I completely forgot about that. I don't know. That was nice. That was nice to not think like, oh, that's Captain America or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it was nice to just be submerged into what I was watching and forget about everything else.
Yeah.
He's one of the few of the Avengers that I think has had a very healthy career outside of Marvel. Like, he goes and he does those HBO drama series, and he, you know, he does other movies. He was in, you know, Spotlight and things like that. Like, he, I really like and enjoy his career. I think he was great in this, and he is not one of the ones I would take out of this category to replace with Charles Melton. So, I'm in for it.
So, sorry, kind of back to Best Actress. Since we've seen all the movies we're going to talk about, we should pick our winner.
I already said mine.
Okay, so Emma Stone's your winner?
No,
she said Lily.
Oh, I'm sorry. So, Joy, who are you? I'm sorry, I should have done that before, in my bad.
I will also go Lily.
I would say yes to Lily as well. I wouldn't be mad if Sandra Hüller won, because I really like that movie. But I think Lily Gladstone is my winner as well. And I actually did see Nayet.
You did? I need to watch it. I'm going to watch it.
There was no neck acting, a la Greta Lee. But she was acting underwater, which is a totally different skill. So props to her.
Would you keep her in the category?
Ooh. Oh, man.
Or replace her with
Greta Lee? Well, I would just take... No, I would leave Annette Bening there because I thought she was good. I would just take Carey Mulligan out and put Greta Lee.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
None of it will win because it's going to be Lily, but Annette Bening wasn't... I think it's just because no one was talking about it and then she was in there and everyone was like, pitchforks. But yeah, Lily's dollar pick, I guess. So then, sorry, go ahead, Beck's supporting actor, go ahead.
Hold on. People are pitchforks for Annette Bening because the movie wasn't talked about, but nobody had pitchforks for Jeffrey Wright or Sterling K. Brown when that movie wasn't talked about.
Yeah.
Not that I saw as much.
No.
No, I didn't see any.
Mm-mm. I mean, it was more like, not so much pitchforks for them, but more like a torch for Charles Melton. Do you know what I'm saying?
100%, yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, go back to the best supporting actor. I'm sorry.
So, supporting actor, have we seen everything?
Yes. Yeah, we have. So then let's talk about who our winner is.
I hate to say that my second rewatch of my rewatch of Oppenheimer has made me like Robert Downey Jr.'s performance even more. Robert De Niro is always great, so that's just a given. But I don't think this was his like shining moment. Sterling K. Brown is wonderful and I love him. I would still be pulling for Ryan Gosling, honestly, because he was so perfect for that. But Mark Ruffalo definitely turned things around for me with this. So
who's your winner?
I'm just gonna go with Ryan Gosling. Why not? Crystal? Any of those three would be fine for me.
It's going to be Robert Downey Jr. and whatever. But I really want Ryan Gosling to win because I really love that performance a lot. And actually, Mark Ruffalo, I wouldn't be mad about that either because I thought he was pretty good. Yeah. But my personal favorite, if it's not Charles Melton, it's going to be Ryan Gosling in my heart. So.
Yeah, those three are definitely my favorites of the five. I really loved Mark Ruffalo's performance. I thought Ryan Gosling was almost the heart of Barbie.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, problems, but whatever.
But I also really enjoyed Robert Downey Jr.'s performance. So I think he's my pick, and I think he's going to win.
Oh, yeah. He's going to win. He won the SAG, too, last night.
I know.
I'm telling the listeners.
No.
You're the only one here, Anna. Okay.
No listeners.
I'm the only one. It is just me.
And director, Yorgos Lanthimos is against Justin Triet for Anatomy of Fall, Martin Scorsese, Killers of the Flower Moon, Christopher Nolan, Oppenheimer, and Jonathan Glazer for The Zone of Interest.
Technically, we haven't seen them all.
Yeah, I'm okay with him here. It was well directed. I will give it that.
It was. It was. A very interesting category that we've touched on many times, but interesting. Best cinematography. It's against El Conde, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, and Oppenheimer.
Silence.
I'm getting my thoughts together. I'm okay with it being here. I thought it was very fun. I thought it was very different from a lot of what we've seen this season. I really enjoyed it. I like it being here. Oh, and now we've seen them all, too. Okay.
Well, El Conde.
Did you watch El Conde?
El Conde. I'm sorry. But we've seen all the other four.
Yeah, I would agree. There were several times where I was like, oh, wow. Just because it looked so, like, wow. And I feel like if that can get, like, a reaction out of you just by that, that's pretty good. So, I'm okay with it here.
I wish I had watched it one more time to be able to get a shot list together. But I know, like, yes, it should be in here. The adapted screenplay. Hold on. Adapted screenplay against American Fiction, Barbie, Oppenheimer, and Zone of Interest.
Like I said before, I have issues with how they approach the story. I don't know anything about the book, so I don't know how it was adapted. But if I just look at it as like a narrative, I'd say sure, but I don't want it to win.
Yeah, I'm cool with it being here. I don't think it will win, and I don't think it's my pick so far.
I wish I knew what other adapted there are, because I don't know that I would have it in here. But I don't know what I would replace it with either.
I'd have to look. Well, you mean what's nominated?
No. I know what's nominated, but I mean
on the short list or something.
Yeah, like what else is out there? What other options?
What else
there
is adapted? Okay,
I get what you
mean. Same.
Because of the five, which we haven't seen, one of them. Also, of the four, I think it's probably the weakest of the four.
Okay.
I would rank it number four out of those four. Between American Fiction, Barbie, and Oppenheimer and this, I would put it at four. Okay. Original score, which I am now blanking on what that sounds like at all because I can't remember. It was a while ago. But American Fiction, Indiana Jones, The Dial of Destiny, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Oppenheimer and this.
I say yes. I thought it was fantastic. It was so weird. It kind of sounds like a sophisticated someone banging on a toy xylophone. Does that make sense?
I love that. I love that.
Yeah, I love that.
Like someone banging on a xylophone, a toy xylophone, but cinema.
Okay, I'm remembering now what it sounds like, and it sounds super weird, but I think it fits with the thing.
So I thought it was so weird and cool and interesting, and it's just like such a... Considering what we normally give a score, it's beautiful and sweeping and gorgeous, which is great. I do love those. But having something so interesting and different, ugh. I thought it was great. I don't know if it'll win. Well, I guess we'll get there. Oh, no. We can talk about it. Oh, I didn't see Indiana Jones.
I said this about John. We know what Indiana Jones is.
Yeah, it's nothing new.
I've said this about John Williams before. He literally does the same thing over and over again, but they always nominate him because he's like... I don't know.
He does what he does well. But
I would have taken him out and put Past Lives or Across the Spider-Verse.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing that John Williams hasn't done before. And it's like, yeah. Tired. Like, it's an app. I'm done. I mean, it's not going to win because it's going to be Oppenheimer, but yay for being interesting, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good points for innovation. Best makeup and hairstyling against Golda, Maestro, Oppenheimer, and Society of Snow.
I agree. It should be here.
Yeah.
If Barbie were in this category, I think Barbie would be my pick.
Yeah.
But since Barbie is not in this category, my pick would be Poor Things.
What, you're not going to pick Bradley Cooper's nose?
That thing still gives me nightmares. That fake tan and the nose haunt my dreams.
Yeah, he was very tan in that.
I think I would be okay if this won this category.
Yeah, I wouldn't be mad. I wouldn't be mad about it. This one did a really good job with makeup and hairstyling. Because Mark Ruffalo's hair was beautiful in this, so sure.
Also
loved it.
I forgot her name, but she played the three witches in Macbeth, where her skin and her like tattoos.
Loved it.
Oh my god, she looks so cool.
What's her name?
Catherine Hunter.
Okay, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
She fits the genre of the film, the feel of the film so well.
Yeah.
She's a weird, a little off-putting. She looks very interesting, like. Her whole body and tattoos, like, oh wow, oh wow,
good stuff.
Yeah, I forgot about her.
She's Greek, and her real name, her non-stage name, is wild to try and pronounce.
But you're gonna try and pronounce.
No,
I thought you were gonna try too.
I'm just looking at it, and I'm like.
We'll look it up after this, and I want you after we record this to try and pronounce it.
First name I think I've got.
What?
Okay, never mind. Keep going.
Costume design: Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer. Yes, absolutely yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think I'm still gonna keep it as my number two, right under Barbie, but it's pretty close.
I mean,
it is my number one.
I don't know. I can't pick honestly because I really loved a lot of both of those. I want a lot of pieces from both movies.
I think Barbie is a good, like, a close to, but Poor Things.
Dang.
I had such visceral reaction to those dresses.
Yeah, yeah. I liked also, like, because when I would join, I would watch Project Runaway. We always talk about proportion. And I love the proportions of the puffy sleeves and the short shorts. Like, the way that... Mm-hmm. And then the boots, the high boots. Like,
yes.
Someone knows what they're doing. Thank you.
So good. I need that outfit. Maybe I'll be Bella for Halloween.
It looks so cool and also comfortable. It didn't look constraint at all, you know?
Anyways. Bella dizzy with delight.
I should have counted how many times she said it. Dang it. I think that's 4 or 5. Or
3. Oh, okay. Calm down.
I'm not freaking out. Counting.
Best editing, Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, and this.
Which we can pick a winner for this one, too.
I agree with it being here. I like it here.
Yeah. I don't. Ooh. This is a. Damn it. This is a tricky category because I think they all did well.
Yeah, that's hard, I think.
That is hard because I feel like editing went off this year.
I think I have my pick.
Who?
I think I would go with Oppenheimer. When I think back to like the overlapping of him hearing the sounds and like the flashbacks to that and the like, I don't know. I just think like the way they broke it up between the three different acts. I thought I really enjoyed the editing in that film.
Yeah, I agree. I think we talked about it in our episode, but like how it was very well edited and didn't feel like convoluted. Okay. Sorry, that was loud. Whatever that was.
Sorry.
It could have easily been messy, but it was very well edited, very well organized. So I guess, but I think also, like, I think Killers of the Flower Moon also had very good editing. So.
I don't know. When I think about like Killers versus Oppenheimer, think of how in Oppenheimer I didn't feel the 3 hours, and in Killers I felt those 3 hours.
That's it.
Fair. Best production design: Barbie, Killers, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, Poor Things. Yes. Is it our win?
Ooh.
Again, that and Barbie are real close.
Yeah.
I'd be fine with either of them winning.
You know what? Yeah,
We all know it's going to go to Napoleon.
I find it so interesting that there's so many things parallel between this movie and Barbie, and that a lot of the technical categories also overlap, which is really interesting to me. And I like it.
Which reminds me of that Letterboxd review that's like Barbie from It to the Mentally Ill.
I saw that.
I wish I saved that too, but it came to my brain again.
It's like one of the first ones that pop up.
Oh, is it? Okay. That's good. That's good.
The top.
Check it out.
Got so many likes.
Oh my God.
Love that.
I still think it's going to be Barbie for me though.
I wouldn't be mad if it won, honestly.
Either of them.
Yeah. But I still think for me it's Barbie.
Oh my God! When we're together for the ceremony, we're having to check off our wins. That's gonna be so hard.
I know.
Oh man.
So yeah, that's Poor Things. I hope you enjoy this episode.
We gotta rank it, babe.
Oh shit! I forgot. Okay. Damn it!
I did not go through all of that pain and suffering for you to forget.
Pain and suffering. Oh no.
Okay, someone else go, obviously.
Okay, I'll go. So at number 9, I have Maestro. At number 8 is why I have Killers of the Flower Moon, which is I switched them because I did more thinking as I was doing this. I was like, you know, maybe Maestro is bad. I mean, it is bad. But maybe it's worse than Killers. Because Killers I had issues with, at least it was better made. Whatever. So, again, 9 is Maestro, 8 is Killers of the Flower Moon, 7 is where I have The Holdovers, 6 is Oppenheimer, 5 is where I have Poor Things, then I have 4 Barbie, 3 American Fiction, 2 Past Lives, and 1 Anatomy of a Fall.
Wow.
Wow, okay.
We've been so similar this entire time, Crystal, and we still are, but there's a bit of a difference now. 9 is Maestro. 8 is Killers of the Flower Moon. 7 is American Fiction. 6 is Holdovers. 5 is Oppenheimer. 4 is Barbie. 3 is Poor Things. 2 is Anatomy of a Fall. And 1 is Past Lives.
Damn.
Yeah.
We are all over the place this year, and I love that.
I know.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what the end of this is, because, or even because I know we're all going to feel different on that Sunday versus mm-hmm. like today or tomorrow or next week or whatever. It'll switch. Okay, what is this, 9? 9, I have Maestro. 8, I moved up Anatomy of a Fall. 7, whoa. Killers. What?
I'm sorry. Continue. What?
Oh, okay. Killers is at 7. Poor Things is number 6. Then I have Barbie and American Fiction. The Holdovers, Oppenheimer, and Past Lives.
Prior to this, where did you have Maestro?
I had it at the second to last. But I was thinking about Anatomy of a Fall, and I was thinking about Sandra Hüller, and I switched it for today.
I don't know why in my head you had Maestro like way higher than that, like in the middle.
Oh.
My
no,
bad.
I think it was only because there was so few of them that it ended up being like number 3 or 4.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. In my head, it was still in the middle for you. So when you said it was number 9, I was like, whoa, that was quite a change of heart. My bad. Now,
yeah. Since it was early on, it wasn't that high.
Right.
But I'm like, since we've had a little bit more time to like sit with them, things are sitting a little bit differently. I might change some, but like, I think Poor Things or Killers of the Flower Moon, I could switch. Even with my qualms about Barbie, Barbie's still at number 5. It's still in the top half. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Okay, so now this is the end of Poor Things, now that we've ranked everything. My bad, I forgot our most important part of the thing. So we've got one more left. One more. And amazing. I've got to post, I've got to make, three Instagram posts today. So I've got to get to work on that. Thank you for listening. Shout us out on Twitter, on Instagram, on wherever. we have nothing else to do but this is what we do for fun, so come have fun with us.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye.